Welcome to That Mom Life. I'm Sarah Jordan. Today, I am joined by Rochelle Beard. Now, Rochelle and I have actually known each other for quite some time, which is pretty spectacular. There's not many people that I get to talk to that I got to graduate with. And now look at you go. We're maintaining friendships. We're going right now. And this is just fabulous. And I'm so glad you decided to join me today. You are a mother to, what is your daughter's name?
Rosemary.
I knew there was a Mary in there. Rosemary. And your job in which... We'll go reverse in a minute. You're an infection preventionist. Is that correct?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Well, so I'm a nurse as my base. I started in pediatrics when I graduated out of college. And then I was that for around 6 years. And then I started going to school for a master's degree with a public health emphasis, still in nursing. And I wanted to find something else to use a higher up degree. And I kind of fell into infection prevention at an organization, was there, did some employee health and quality improvement work there too. And then I went to a hospital and did infection prevention there and was there when COVID hit and all that fun stuff. And then now I work for a hospital association doing infection prevention, kind of more in an education and consulting role. So the whole point of an infection preventionist is to exactly what the title says, prevent infections. And that is for employees, that is for staff. The role kind of covers a variety of things depending on how many infection preventionists you can have at your facility, what type of facility you have. But the whole main goal is to prevent the spread of infection, whether that be through infection precautions or education, best practice, using CDC guidance, all those good things.
So, okay, on a normal year, I can imagine that being a very taxing job. I'm sure there are times when you read some crazy data that you're like, okay, now what? How do I do my job? How do I do this? So in the last year, I mean, your job was changing on the daily, was it not?
100%. Yeah, it was kind of crazy. And one of the worst, I know this is a mom podcast, one of the worst things I had to experience was I was on call one weekend and I got a call from a nurse on the floor and we had our first positive pregnant woman. And they were like, what are we going to do when her child's born? And I was like, oh my gosh, I've never handled this. And this was probably late March. So it was pretty close to the beginning of when it hit Kentucky. And I had to call the infectious disease doctor and chatted with her. And we came up with that best practice at the time was that the baby had to be removed from the mom. And the dad couldn't go be with the baby either because he'd been around the mom and therefore was exposed and could be contagious. And this was a Saturday afternoon. I remember I was standing in my basement. I got off the phone and I just fell to the ground and just sobbed because as a mom myself, the thought of having my baby taken away from me immediately and I can't be there and then my husband or my significant other couldn't be there just broke my heart. That's probably the thing that stands out the most 100% about the whole pandemic.
You know, I had several friends. I had my last daughter in November of 2019. And so it was right before the pandemic hit. But then I had several friends who had babies during the pandemic. And that was their number one fear is, what if my husband can't be there? Or what if I test positive? I know one of my friends had a direct conversation with me. She was like, if they tell me I'm positive, then I may just sign the papers and leave the hospital versus them taking the baby from me at the time, because it was all changing so rapidly. And I mean, never in my lifetime have I remembered some time where health standards or CDC procedures or what to do at the workplace in a grocery store was changing at such a rapid pace. And clearly, but babies are still being born. People are still getting admitted to the hospital. I mean, I can't imagine what that mom had to do.
Yeah. And right then there was so much unknown and didn't know if the baby would have it and those kind of things. And I will emphasize that you can never force take a baby away in a hospital.
No.
You can only strongly recommend. But at that point, that was 100% like, we want to push to do this because there was so much unknown and it was heartbreaking and such a hard decision.
I cannot even begin to imagine. And in fact, I had this conversation. So my one cousin and his wife, they've been in South Korea the last 3 years, and she's getting ready to have a baby in like 2 weeks. Now, her family is from there, but part of the reason she switched hospitals, the first hospital told her as soon as the baby was born, they were going to take the baby from her as a COVID precaution. And then she was like, hell no. And then the next hospital she found to be dirty. And so she was like, no. And then she ended up at a third hospital that was closer to a U.S. military base that had more U.S. type practices with their CDC guidelines just because of that. But I remember being on the phone with her, and her and I were discussing it because they basically said, oh yes, this is just common procedure. We're going to take the baby. And that was like a standard protocol, regardless of a positive test or anything. And I was like, no. What?
Interesting.
Now, I will say the cool thing about that, not that part, but now that she's found different healthcare, clearly that's not cool in any way, shape or form. They actually have rehab facilities for new moms. So you actually like leave the hospital and then you go into a rehab facility where there's additional nurses to help you take care of the baby and help you heal yourself. And it's almost like a glorified hotel. And then you get to go home after that. And like, obviously then they're allowing like the husband to come in and out or your partner or whatever. And so she did sign up for that. And it's, I'm like, well, that's kind of nice to think that you get to like keep having nurses for another 2 weeks and people to help you.
Right. And then they probably have sweet maternity leave too.
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
Okay. So sorry, I got super distracted because as soon as you told me what your job title was, I was just like, I cannot imagine having to keep up with that. And not only keep up with that, but be responsible for that in a business workplace and help other people get through this. You didn't have to just pay attention to it. You had to learn it and teach it.
Right. Which was fun.
You know, I guess at that point, in some ways I'm like, look what you did. You get to be a part of a moment in history. Look at the job you chose and the career path. Like, you were so needed.
This is true, but still it was, I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Heck no. Heck no. I'm trying to find some silver linings here. And I have to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for nurses and healthcare workers, because the world would not have gone round. You didn't get to take time off. You didn't get to just say, oh, I'm going to work from home and go virtual. It wasn't an option for you. You had to be in the mix.
For
and
sure.
I can respect anybody that does what you've done. I mean, even now that we're what, 14 months out from when I guess we hit original lockdown, just I'm going to go ahead and start by saying thank you.
Well, thanks. No problem. And I'm more so to the front line taking care of the patients. I am removed from the patient care aspect. So I have even more gratitude for those who are still doing direct patient care. I used to do that. I don't anymore. But for sure, the frontline workers, 100%. Thanks so much.
Oh, yes. Unbelievable what they've done. They all deserve at some point like a paid vacation on behalf of the government or something. I have no idea. They like just as an extra. Here you go. So, Rocha, let's reverse back because I know we just jumped in straight to COVID. Now, growing up, you and I both grew up in Southern Indiana, but I didn't actually get to meet you until high school because you actually ended up you went to a Louisville private school, correct?
I did. I went to Portland Christian from kindergarten until 10th grade. And then I'd always lived in Southern Indiana, but at the end of 10th grade, I kind of was like, I just want to try something different. And the theater program drew me to Floyd Central, obviously. So I came to Floyd Central in junior year.
Well, that was my next question, was what drew you to leave the school system? And I met you in theater class. And that's one of those things I think that most people, when you're growing up around here, you don't realize how good we did have it. Like that theater program is better than some professional theaters. The facilities are better. The support the school system gives to the whole performing arts department of the school system. I mean, it's truly a wonderful place to be a part of.
Yeah. And so much fun.
Was it Singing in the Rain?
I mean, probably. And we were probably in theater class together. And we were besties with Allie.
Yes. You and I were 100% in theater class together. Allie, our mutual friend, one of my dearest friends. I literally just talked to her today.
That's so funny. Me too.
It's funny. I often tell people this, and you probably feel the same way even about Allie. There are certain friends that I feel like are great loves of my life in the sense that, like, I don't care how much time passes, I will always think of them the most fondly. Or they're people that, like, we grew up together. Our families know each other. I know her mom. She knows my parents. I mean, actually, I want to say, didn't you show up to my house to come trick or treating with us 1 year with Allie?
Yeah, we did.
And which that's the first one. Yes.
Didn't have any.
Yes. And I hadn't seen Allie in forever. And it was like this burst into tears moment because that's how I am with her. When I do get to see her, I'm just like, oh. So yes, I do love that. And that I think is she befriended you. So therefore, I think I was around you because of that. So yes, you and I go way back. But theater is different.
She's going to think this is hilarious because I told her that we were going to talk today. And she was like, oh my gosh, how do I listen? So shout out Allie.
Which you don't realize you're one of the greatest loves of our lives. So thank you for being there. No, she cracks me up. Actually, and one of my college friends who's still a lifelong friend, I became friends with her in college because I was like, you remind me of Allie. And she was so funny. She sang all the time. She's probably one of the best singers I've ever heard that's never made it professionally. It's crazy. So you and I both started in theater or met each other through theater, but neither of us chose that as a profession. So was that just a passion project for you at the time? Because it was for me, I think.
Oh, yeah. Plus, I'm not good enough. So
also that, same.
Yeah. No, that was just, I just had a good time. I just enjoyed it. And it was fun. And we got to go places and you made a lot of friends and it was fun.
Oh, it was the best. I mean, some of my happiest moments, like I was telling you when I asked you to send me a bio, if you could think of little, on a roadmap, little destinations along the way throughout your life, I would say my theater period, going to Nebraska for the international thespian festivals and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Some of the highlights, that's when I peaked, I feel like, at one point, as far as like my theatrical career, as I was auditioning for college with my most talented peers, I'm like, this is weird. Who am I?
Going to Scotland. That was,
I didn't get to go.
I did, but you know, when you don't have digital camera or Facebook to track your memories, I feel like I am missing like 50% of that trip in my mind. I can't remember like half of it, but it was pretty and we got to perform. But outside of that, I'm like, man, I'm getting old. My memory must be going.
You know what's funny? I was talking to one of my other friends who's also in the healthcare field, and she says, I keep feeling like my memory is going. And I was like, I think it's because you have to keep actively learning and you can only hold so much stuff in your brain. So some of the other pieces start to fall out.
I think that sounds totally appropriate.
Especially when you're talking like medical things, that's heavy things to store in your brain. So, in college, you went down your nurse path, and we already talked about the fact that you now have like multiple degrees. You have your nursing degree, you have your master's degree, and then you have the infection prevention a special certification?
I'm not certified, but I'm working on it. And barring any unforeseen circumstances, I should get certified this summer.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So then you went on a special, was it a mission trip? Was this during college?
No, I was 24. So
okay.
I was out of college. A medical mission trip to Niger or Niger in Africa. And I went on this trip not knowing anybody except for this one friend I'd gone to Portland Christian with. And she was already over there. So when I was, the people I was flying with, I'd never met before. And so, but I knew I wanted to go. So I signed up for it. And yeah.
You went to South Africa.
No, it's like like in the middle. Someone who's going to listen to this is going to be like, oh my gosh. It's like north, middle.
Let's go back to part of the memory. She does so many important things that she starts to lose pieces of this. No.
Yes.
So, okay. So you've been to Europe now. You've mentioned Scotland and Africa in the last 2 minutes. I have never left the country outside of Mexico. And I'm over here going, I have work to go, work to do.
I don't go anywhere now.
What was the mission trip like? That's incredible.
We had clinics at these two different like small towns, and people lined up and we had translators and they told me what their symptoms were. And I'd only been a nurse for like 2 years at this point, and I would try to like figure out what they had wrong with them. And then I'd come up with a medication they needed. They'd take their little paper over to our makeshift pharmacy, which was like medicines in Ziploc bags and stored in suitcases and whatnot, and they would get a medication. It was this really crazy experience, but like they were so grateful that we were there to help them. And I mean, they would line up from before we got there, and it was hot and there were just so many people, but like it was pretty cool. It was a surreal thing, and they were so appreciative.
So you barely had your nursing degree and you were going down there. Was that specifically the purpose of you going down there, because you were a nurse?
Yes, it was a medical mission trip with a like Christian spin. It was under a Christian organization who'd been doing these trips like twice a year. So a lot of the places that they went were familiar with the organization. And so this was just the medical aspect that they did it. That was the main focus, but it was under a Christian organization. But we weren't all medical.
How long were you there?
Like 13 days.
Do you remember that trip more? Do you feel like that changed the trajectory for you of where you would further take your nursing career?
Not nursing wise, because I will say I felt like I called, I should go there, but I haven't really felt that again, even though I loved the trip. But the thing that changed the most about my life is where I met my husband. He was one of two men that were on the trip. Of course, being a 24-year-old girl, I was like, well, let's look up who this guy is, because I already know who the other guy was. So I already was like smitten by them before we even went there. But we started chatting in the airport when we met, and we found out our dads knew each other. Both of our dads are preachers. Yes. So both of our dads are preachers. They knew each other. And
weird.
Yeah, right off the bat. And actually, I kept a journal when I was there. And I think it was on day 11. I was going to look this up to make sure before I talk to you. But I think it was day 11. I wrote that I was falling in love with him. And he came and visited me as soon as we got back to the States, and he was living in Louisville at the time. I was living in Indianapolis, and he drove up and visited me, and we started dating that weekend.
That the chances of that happening, that and then you both end up in the, we'll call it the middle ish of Africa,
right,
together. Both of your dads are preachers. You have an immediate connection to one another. And based on what you told me, your relationship got jump-started pretty fast. I mean, you guys went from not dating to serious pretty quick, right?
Oh yeah. So this was the end of June. My birthday is the end of July. And he asked me on my birthday, he was like, what do you want to do for your birthday? And I was like, let's go pick out a dog and look at rings.
I love that.
No joke. We did it. And literally the next day, I didn't know this at the time, he put a down payment on my ring. And so we met in end of June. We got engaged the beginning of October. And then the following year, so this was 2011, 2012, March 31st, we got married. So we're going on, we just finished our 9th anniversary.
I love that. You know, anymore, and I've said this to people time and time again, it's like when you know, you do know. I mean, I know that sounds cliche, but I feel like the second you start dating that person, you can feel it's different almost from the first date.
Yes.
I think by the time my husband and I had started dating, we had met each other's parents in less than the first month. And then I met his grandparents by the time we had only been dating, I think 1 month exactly. We went out to dinner with his grandparents for their like 85th birthdays or something like that. And his grandfather told Brian in the parking lot that he just met his future wife and he better not let me get away. And he was like, I'm so sorry if you're freaked out. And I was like, I'm not freaked out for some reason, even though I've only known you a month and I'd never known him prior. I had just met him a month earlier. And I mean, yeah. But when you know, you know. And I love that. And that's why sometimes when people are like, we keep going back and forth and I feel like we're playing games, I'm like, are you playing games? Like, mm-hmm. Why?
I can't relate at all.
I cannot relate at all. I know. I feel the same way. I'm like, you really should just No. And if they say, how do you know? I don't know. You just do. It just is there or it's not there. So you guys got married and then you were pretty adamant at first about not having kids, correct?
Yeah. I mean, I always wanted to have kids, but I definitely didn't want to right away. He is 5 years older than I am. So he was more on I want to have kids pretty soon, but I didn't. And then we kind of had set like a 2-year time frame, and then that 2 years came and I was like, no. And then I started working on my master's, and then I didn't want to have a baby when I was still completing my master's. So I waited until that. And that was like, finished that in 2016. And then just as a additional thing to throw in, I had to get my tonsils taken out because they're huge. And so I had to wait until after that, until I recovered from that. And then we finally were like, okay, I guess we'll try. And then I got pregnant with Rosemary.
And was that a pretty typical, pregnancy? I know that when you and I were talking, you were not one of those people that was like, I love being pregnant.
No, that was definitely not me. I think I probably had like the easiest pregnancy of anybody in the world, but I still like just did not like it. It took us no time to get pregnant. I never had any nausea or anything like that. The only thing that I had was gestational diabetes. And although it's a pain in the butt, controlling it with diet was fine and just required a little bit of extra planning. But yeah, my pregnancy was very just normal. I just didn't really like it.
I feel like the first time around, I thought it was cute. I mean, not that it's wonderful and it's beautiful. Don't get me wrong. But by the third time around, I was like, I am just in pain all the time. Like, don't feel cute.
The sleeping and peeing.
The sleeping. Yes. And again, by the third time around, add in the heartburn and stuff like that, I was like, I just don't feel cute. I don't feel that pregnancy glow. But once you had Rosemary, you had a moment in the hospital where motherhood completely hit you.
Yeah. So I was concerned. I look back and maybe a little irrationally, that I was just going to like not be a mom and that I just wouldn't feel that mom, pull or connection. Because while I was pregnant, I didn't really have that with Rosemary. I mean, I knew she was there and I cared about her being safe and healthy and those kind of things, but I wasn't one of those people that was like, oh, I've loved you since before we knew you. I was like, no, I really needed to know you first. And so I was kind of worried, but when Rosemary was born, I mean, I've always liked kids and I did pediatric nursing for 6 years. So all that was fine and getting adjusted and all that. And I loved her as soon as she was born. But I remember it was the fifth day we were there. Rosemary had been on lights for her high bilirubin for I think 2 days at that point. And they were telling me that we were going to have, I was being discharged, but she was going to have to stay in the hospital. We could still be together. They just moved me to a different unit. And I remember her pediatrician was talking to me and tears just started streaming down my face. And I was sitting there and in my brain, I'm like, Rochelle, stop being crazy. You've taken care of babies exactly like her before. You know it's going to be okay. What is wrong with you? But just streaming. Like, I was so upset that she was going to have to be admitted, that she was going to be a patient of the hospital. They were going to monitor for this extra day. And like right then at that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, I am her mom. This is my kid. Like, this is the bond. This is it. And yeah, it was like, it was a very memorable, like, noticeable moment for me.
You know, when I was in the hospital with my son, I was in labor for 30 hours and obviously not sleeping. And then of course, at the time you could have as many guests as you wanted. So it was like, yay, let's have everyone there. So for the first 24 hours, I mean, I remember my husband literally passing out in the hospital chair because he had been up the entire time. I'm over here trying to entertain guests and handle my body and a baby. And I was, let's just say, way too swollen after pushing out an almost 9-pound baby for 3 hours. Because it did take me 3 hours to get him out. But then at one point, it was like, I think on day 2-ish, maybe 3, everyone had left. No one was left. My husband ran home to go get something and all of the nurses left me. And I remember sitting in the window trying to do like skin to skin, holding the baby. And I just freaked out and started crying because I was like, oh my God, I am a mother forever. Like my life trajectory just changed in every way, shape, and form. And I was also like, I don't know. I freaked out. So I was like, I don't know how to take care of baby. You're getting ready to send me home. I don't know what to do. And a nurse walked in and she was like, are you okay? And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Because at first you're like, I'm pregnant. I'm growing a baby. I'm going to baby showers. People are giving me things. And then I'm going to go in the hospital and we're going to come home and it's going to be cute and all these outfits. And then all of a sudden the reality hits you in the face. And it's both amazing and wonderful and the greatest moment of my life, yet a moment I was probably the most terrified in my life.
Yeah, definitely scary.
I don't even think I had changed a diaper prior to having kids.
You're a pro now.
Now we got it. Three kids deep, we're good. So then you guys have Rosemary and things are moving along. And then you decide to try for baby two and things start taking a different path, correct?
Yes. So Rosemary, it was right before Rosemary turned two, we decided to go ahead and start trying for a second one. And first of all, it's just a sidebar here. I think it's hilarious that people refer to when you're trying to have a baby that it's trying to have a baby. When we all know it's just you're planning your sex time. That's all.
Really?
It's hilarious.
You know what? I've never thought about that, but you're 100% right. That's not what you're doing. When you're in the hospital in labor, that's when you're trying to have a baby.
Right. You're just planning out your quality time with your husband. So,
you know what?
Well, we just started doing that.
I'm going to never say that again, and I'm going to think of you from now on. That's so funny.
I mean, it literally pops into my head every time I say it. But you know, you have to be like, I don't know, okay, when people are talking to you about it. I don't know. Maybe they don't want to think that far into it. But anyway, so we started trying, and I thought that I would get pregnant like right away because I had no problems the first time. Before I got pregnant with Rosemary, I actually had set enough in my mind that I was going to have problems because I had had issues in the past. I had had a really large cyst that I had to have removed off my ovary, which also resulted in the loss of one of my ovaries and one of my tubes, and then also discovered endometriosis. So I thought that it was going to take me a long time to get pregnant with Rosemary. And when it didn't, I was surprised, but then I thought it would be the same going forward, which has definitely not been the case. That was July 2019, and we are now in May 2021, and I do not have a baby. So it wasn't working. 6 months later, I was at my annual visit at my OBGYN. She wasn't really concerned. I thought I should be concerned because of my prior medical history. So I looked into going to a fertility specialist, and we had our initial visit with her on St. Patrick's Day of 2020, and then everything shut down. So everything was put on hold for a little bit, but then we started back up in June and did a few rounds of IUI, which for those who don't know, it's intrauterine insemination, where essentially you take medications to stimulate egg production, and then your husband's sperm is inserted via a catheter into your uterus in a doctor's office. And then you hope that everything's at the right place in the right time. You just hope that the rest of the things happen and form an embryo and then a baby. So we did four rounds of those.
So what was that like for you mentally going through the IUI procedures, just because that's got to be mentally taxing from the sense of you've got so much going on. You're trying to plan how you're going to make a baby. You're having to plan out your hormones, keep track of all of these cycles, not to mention fiscally figuring it all out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we didn't have any fertility coverage in our benefits. So we did everything's been out of pocket. And another thing to just add into it that kind of was a weird thing for me is Ryan, my husband, couldn't even be in the room whenever I was having these inseminations done. So he would drop off his sample about an hour before I would get there. I'd get there, they'd do the transfer, I'd chat with the doctor, and then I'd be on my way. We didn't even see each other whenever this happened, which I was like, if we get pregnant, literally like, he's not even going to be in the building, not much less the room. So yeah, I mean, I was okay during all that because I still was like, it's going to happen. I mean, we're setting everything up. We literally are taking away all the boundaries or issues that we could potentially have and literally putting everything right place, right time. Like, I have no reason to believe it's not going to happen. And I still wasn't in a rush at that point. I still was okay with whatever was happening. And I was just reaching the 1 year point at that point. And then I think once I hit a little bit past a year, I was kind of like, oh, this sucks.
I can't imagine going through all that. And you're right. What a story to tell. Like, people are like, do you remember the night you conceived? My husband wasn't even there. I mean, it sounds like a punchline.
Yeah.
So what became the next step for you? Because the one thing about you, and part of the reason I reached out to you, you've been very open about putting this stuff on social media, and you guys did end up going for IVF, correct?
Yes. So we took a little bit of a break, and I decided to switch doctors just for like location reasons. And I talked with a doctor at the new facility and mapped out a plan that to go forward with IVF. I originally had IVF wasn't even on my radar. It was not something I wanted to do because I didn't think I would be able to come to a decision about embryos that would make me feel comfortable, because I didn't want to have to deal with having any extra embryos. A lot of times people go into IVF and they really want to have the most embryos possible because that means they have the most chances of pregnancy. Yes, that would be great, but I didn't want to get pregnant on the first try and have four embryos to decide what to do with, because I didn't want to have somebody else adopt them because that's my child. I didn't want to throw them in the trash because that's my child. And I also didn't want to give birth to four more children because I didn't want like six children. So I didn't want to go with IVF originally because of that, but I realized I could control kind of how many embryos we made. So I just kind of went forward with that plan of wanting to do, I only wanted them to attempt to fertilize two eggs, regardless of however many they were able to get during the egg retrieval. And so that's what we did. And they retrieved six mature eggs. They attempted to fertilize two. One made it and the other did not, but didn't until like day six. And when I found out that one didn't make it, even though they'd already transferred the good one, it hit me I experienced a whole lot of emotions I'd never really experienced at one time. I was kind of relieved because I was convinced the one embryo was going to work. So I didn't really want to go through the process again to try to have another child after that. So I was relieved on that aspect. I was sad because, again, I looked at these embryos as if they were my own children already. And then just having that combination of being like sad about it, but then relieved at the same time. But then I was also nervous because I was like, oh, I don't have a backup plan. So I felt all those things at the same time, which just resulted in my bawling my eyes out, of course. And I was hormonal because of all the medications, but, yeah.
I mean, I can only imagine. I think you I can't imagine anyone not bawling their eyes out in that situation. Again, the amount of time, and I don't even think it's the time, meaning the overall journey you got to even get to that place. And I've never thought about the embryos in that sense. I mean, what you're dealing with there, I mean, not to mention you have a little girl at home too. And like, you obviously need to take care of her and do all these other things. That's just so much to juggle. And it's such a, it's just so much tax on your brain and your body. I mean, good Lord, your body. So, I mean, and I remember seeing this stuff on social media. So what did you decide after the IVF failed? What did you decide was going to be your next step?
So after officially found out the embryo transfer didn't work, I was like, oh, I've always been interested in adopting. I talked with Ryan. He was like, yeah, I'm open to it because we've literally tried everything else. And I was like, okay. And if you know me, I'm the kind of person that literally just hits the ground running. And when I have something I want to do, I just go to it. And so like in 4 days, I'd probably done the amount of adoption research that a normal person would do in like 4 weeks. So in less than a week, I found out that my embryo transfer didn't work. And then I've already done all this research. I've looked into my employee benefits. I've looked into costs, which can be anywhere from $10,000 to $50,000. I've looked into all these things. How am I going to raise money? What are the fundraisers? What can we afford? Do I have any work benefits? All this stuff. And I was majorly overwhelmed. Not to mention, you mentioned having Rosemary and going through all this. So she's three. She knew my shots and stuff as I was going through IVF was to help us have a baby. And one day she got to where she was asking me regularly if I had a baby in my belly.
Oh, yeah.
I might cry when I talk about this.
I'm sorry. That's awful.
Yeah. So, and I had to tell her that, no, I don't. And that I probably never would. And her response was, oh no. She goes, but I wanted to hold her.
Oh no.
And I had to explain that sometimes mommies can't carry babies in their belly. So then I asked her if it'd be okay if we maybe had a baby that didn't come from my belly, came from someone else's baby and needed us to take care of it. And she said yes. And we talked about how the baby might not look exactly like us and how we compared it to like one of her baby dolls and how they still look like us, but they may just not have the same skin color or hair color. And she was totally okay with it. So that's probably where we're going. We took a pause because I did have a mental breakdown, but we were taking a class in the middle of this month about adoption, and then we're going to take steps to go from there.
It's okay. I think it's important. This is the whole purpose I wanted to start this podcast, was to be a village of support for other women. And the thing is I've obviously talked to a lot of women who've had successful fertility treatments. And I don't think most people ever assume, well, if you have one child, why can't you have another child? Like, mm-hmm. They don't understand the fertility issues that could be there and the underlying things. And I think it's so important to have open conversations about the types of conversations that are happening to so many more women than they think. And finances do come into play. I mean, I had an aunt who has one daughter and had several miscarriages, and she wanted to adopt and they never could financially afford it. And now her daughter's 20 years old and they never did end up adopting because they never could afford it. And it's just so much more to take on than I think people simply realize. And so in kids have a way of asking questions in such a pure way that, like, there have been times that I'm driving and they ask me something and I'm silently crying because I'm like, I have no idea how to answer their question. And like, it's such a hard hitting question that I'm just like,
she just asked me again yesterday. And I was like, it's probably not never. Like, she just keeps asking. She keeps hoping. She wants a sibling so bad. I mean, I know once she has a sibling, she's going to be like, take it back. But right now she really wants one.
I mean,
and that actually is what drives me forward a lot too.
It's her.
Because I'm like, I think Ryan and I could, I don't know. I think I could at least be okay with whatever outcome when all is said and done, because yeah, I wouldn't be what I wanted, but I could get there, you know. But having a 3-year-old who's begging to have a sibling, I'm like, I can't stop until I have that.
And you know,
we'll get her one. I just don't exactly know how it's going to happen.
A friend of mine.
It'll not happen through IVF because I'm not doing that again, but it won't be that way.
I had a friend of mine who, her and I were out together and someone was like, oh, you and your husband have been married for a while. Why haven't you had kids yet? You need to get on that. You're not getting any older or any younger. And we got into the car and she looked at me and she was like, does she not realize I'm having fertility issues? Does she not realize that I've been trying to have a baby for 3 years? And I looked at her and I was like, how the amount of people, like you just said, the people asking, oh, are you guys trying to have a baby? The amount of people that ask those questions, not realizing what the background story is. And I have never asked someone that question. And I know most people don't meet it with malice or understand what they're asking. But that friend of mine, they had less than a 10% chance of conceiving naturally. They ended up, right before she was about to start IUI, she got pregnant naturally, had her daughter. But now she's in a very similar boat as you, same age as you. And they've been trying to have a second for about 3 years now, and nothing has happened. And they're looking at IVF right now. And she just, that's what she keeps telling me. She's like, I don't know if I can handle IVF.
They're meeting. I don't want to again.
Well, hers is more just like the emotional end. She's just like, I don't know if I want to go through this. Yeah. And so they're also okay, low-key looking at adoption.
Yeah, it was okay for me until I got to after the embryo transfer and the progesterone injections. They really messed with me. The stimulation meds that everybody talks about, that everyone knows about, those didn't do anything to me. But once I got into that progesterone and the estrogen, because you have like a topical estrogen you use, like it was hard. And then you're in that 2 week wait period of, am I pregnant or am I not pregnant? And that was an emotional toll of 2 weeks that I do not want to put myself in again. That was the part that was hard for me. But I don't think that everybody experiences that way. Some people have side effects and stuff with the stimulation meds. Like, you don't really know how your body's going to react, but I can't go through that emotional 2 weeks again, not knowing that if it's going to work or not, because IVF is still only like a 40% chance when you do a fresh embryo transfer. And I think it only gets up to close to 60 in some cases. So I'm not equipped to do that, to take that gamble again, I don't think.
Your journey to motherhood, and thankfully, obviously, you have Rosemary, and she is adorable. She is a precious little girl. And I'm so thankful that you're willing to be open and talk about this, because I think so many women are, oh, I don't even know if it's scared or ashamed, or they don't know if other women are going through these types of things. But it's just like, I think it's important to have an open conversation about, first of all, your options and what's next and your feelings of not being alone with things that are going on. I mean, Rochelle, you're so strong. And I mean, I know you referenced having like a breakdown, but how could you not? I mean, in that situation, with that many hormones surging through your body, hormones do crazy things, especially when you have that many in there. I mean, you're a trooper, and I'm so grateful that you're talking to me today.
Thanks. I've loved actually being able to share this, because just on the selfish end on my side, after I put my first post about struggling with infertility, I think it had been after we did two IUIs maybe, or three, I had so many people like private message me or text me, people that I, you know, you're just Facebook acquaintances with, hadn't spoken to in a long time, who had told me they had miscarriages or told me that they had, they're doing treatments as well. And, or their baby came from IVF and, or they're doing an IUI, all these kind of things. And then I actually made friends with somebody who was going through the same things, the exact same treatment schedule almost as I was, and built like a friendship. And I'd never actually really spoken to this person. And so it just really like, it helped, it uplifted me too. I knew I wasn't alone, but to hear people sharing their stories and then also thanking me for sharing mine really, like, it boosted me up. So like I have no regrets on sharing everything. Anyone can ask me anything. I will be an open book always. And it's been really helpful and really beautiful to see the like women come through and really support me and then also share their stories as well. And then I've been able to follow their journeys too. So it's been really great.
You know, I actually, as you said that, I was just thinking, I was like, I may need to send my one friend over to you, who's literally on such a similar wavelength for what you've just been through. It sounds like she's just getting ready to go through. And yeah. I'm sure she may have some people that she's known that experienced it, but to have someone who just experienced it just now, I mean, it's just, it's something that so many more women go through. And I'm glad that they felt comfortable reaching out to you and that you do that for people, because I think it is super important to not feel alone or feel like, what's wrong with me? Or why can't I have this, when so many people are in that exact same position? And I hope as more people share their stories, other people learn to perhaps not ask as many, I mean, not ask as many questions, ask inappropriate questions, I should say.
Yeah. Or the ones that are like, are you pregnant? No, I just ate too much today. Like, leave me alone.
And then there's those people. Yes, I've had even those people too. I'll post a picture of, like, in a fancy dress, and they're like, oh, do I see a baby bump? I'm like, nope, that's just me after three kids, but thanks.
I had someone literally ask me when I was picking up lunch for my coworkers on my way back from an IUI. I almost lost it.
Who asks that?
Some lady at the deli.
At the deli. Oh, not even a person you knew. Literally random lady at the deli. Oh, okay. I don't know if that's better or worse.
I held the door open for her because I was being nice.
I can't with that one. That one is a little bit too much to take. I don't know if it's worse that it would be a friend that asked you that or versus a stranger.
It's worse that it's a stranger. I cried in the car.
I would have too.
A trend here of my journey.
Oh, good Lord. Rochelle, you are absolutely incredible. I respect you so much for what you do with your profession, the type of mother that you are, the way you lead your life. You are a fantastic person, and I'm so glad that I've been able to call you a friend now for the last 20 years, which is kind of insane. So Thanks so much
for asking me.
You know what? I was thinking about it and I was just like, I've got to ask Rochelle. And I knew that you were pretty open on Facebook and social media in general. So I was like, I bet she'd be okay with this, because again, most people only want to share the happy journeys, and there is so many happy moments of your journey, but they don't want to talk about the other side. And I'm so thankful for that for you. So Rochelle, thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, it was my pleasure. I enjoyed it.